Welcome to Think Like a CEO, a special series on the Elite Achievement Podcast. If you've ever been told to think like a CEO, but weren't quite sure what that actually means, this series is for you. We're going behind the scenes with real CEOs, leaders who've built 7- and 8-figure businesses, to unpack the mindset shifts, leadership habits, and strategic decisions that fueled their growth. You're about to hear how real CEOs think so you can evolve your identity, elevate your leadership, and start making decisions like the CEO your business needs. Today's guest, Jennifer Barnes, kicks off the series with a powerful story of resilience and reinvention. Her entrepreneurial journey began when she was fired just 6 weeks before her wedding. Clients wanted to follow her, so she partnered up and built her first business, growing it into a multi-million dollar company. But years later, she was kicked out of the very business she helped build. A few days later, she started over and launched Optima Office. Jennifer went from being pushed out to proving she never needed a partner in the first place. And today, she's built one of the leading outsourced accounting and HR firms in the country. In this episode, we talk about the importance of making decisions quickly, the role resilience plays in entrepreneurship, and how to build a culture that keeps employees engaged. I'm inspired to launch this series with Jennifer's story, a reminder that even the toughest setbacks can become a catalyst for something bigger. Welcome, Jennifer.
Hi, how are you?
I am doing so good, and I am looking forward to our conversation today. Our conversation today, Jennifer, is going to kick off the Think Like a CEO series. And so I'm excited to share your story with our listeners and help our listeners really understand what it means to think like a CEO. Now, before we dive into that, I'm curious, what does achieving elite success mean to you personally and professionally?
I think success is different for everybody. Success is whatever you want it to be. If your success is, I want to live in a 7-bedroom house and have 6 kids and I don't want to ever work, then that's success for you if you've accomplished and achieved that. Success for me, I like to build and I like to grow, especially as a female entrepreneur in a very male-dominated industry. For me, it's very important to see my company succeed, see my employees happy, show that the extra touch that I give, the extra care that I show to my organization is meaningful. It helps them stay, high retention, happy people, happy clients, happy life for me. I don't have to work too overly hard. I mean, I work hard, but I don't kill myself. And so for me, success is being able to live work-life balance, also raise my, I have a toddler, and then, you know, run a great company.
So you mentioned you're really passionate about growing as a female entrepreneur. How'd you get started on your entrepreneurial journey? What led you to launch your first business?
Sure. I think I've had entrepreneurship in my blood since I was young, but I just got thrown into it. It was not something planned. Fortunately, I do have my MBA, and I have to say that helped me understand the inner workings of how to run a business successfully, but that still took a lot of time and trial and error. When I was in my early 30s, I ended up getting fired from one of our competitors, outsourced accounting company. And one of the reasons is I like to do things a certain way, and it's generally to help the customer. And I was giving customers a financial package, especially our not-for-profit clients, that I thought was really helpful for them. Well, unfortunately, the firm didn't agree with me, and they found out that I was giving my one-off financial package to these companies, and they fired me immediately, like on the spot. And I said, well, the companies are going to want to go with me because I'm the one giving them what they want. And so the CEO of that company said, you know, how about this? I'll give 2 weeks. We'll call your clients. We'll see who wants to go with you. And if any one of them want to go with you, they can go with you. We'll give you the work papers, the QuickBooks files, everything you need. But the one caveat is that you can't call, text, reach out to any of them. And we'll let you know in 2 weeks what your client base is going to be. And so they called 15 of my clients and 12 went with me.
Wow.
And at that point in time, a lot of my staff people working under me, even my intern, quit and came to work with no name Jennifer out of my living room. And that's essentially, long story short, and how I got started. And I grew that first company to about $6 million in 6 years. And I had partners after the fact, which is a whole nother story that didn't work out. And so I created Optima Office 7 years ago on my own.
So you didn't have this big vision to go be an entrepreneur. It was really that turning point when you got fired from your company and all your clients, or almost all your clients, raised their hand and said, wait, I'm going with you. And you're like, okay, I guess I have a business now.
Yeah, correct.
And you mentioned that there was a partnership in this first business. What was that experience like, having a partner? And then what led you to leave that partnership and start over?
Yeah, I'm going to give you the short version, because I think it would be a long version. I actually had a screenplay written about it. We're going to hopefully get it made into a movie one day when I have extra time on my hands. But you know, there was really good parts of having a partner. It's not all on you. And when I had been fired, it was 6 weeks before my wedding. Oh. And I didn't have enough revenue from the clients that came with me to pay the team that came with me and pay myself the what I was used to. So I was out looking for maybe a part-time controller job. Mm-hmm. And I came across somebody who ended up offering me a 50% partnership in their business. And then that company had one client, one staff person. It really wasn't going anywhere. The 50% partner had a full-time job. And so he really wasn't really involved in the business for several years. And so I kind of ran that on my own. But it was nice because when I got married, he handled a lot of stuff for me. He took my employees under his wing and, you know, did a lot of the kind of contractual work that I hadn't really done before. So at first it was good. And then a couple years in, I'm like, hey, you're not really doing anything. You own 50% of the company. This kind of sucks for me because I've built it to about $1.5 million now. And, you know, I need some more help. So in 2016, we brought him on as our full-time COO. And at the same year, we gave 10% equity to a CFO who also came from the firm that I had been fired from. And he brought some clients and he brought some staff. So it seemed like, oh, wow, this is amazing. Everything's really flowing together. But what wasn't amazing is I became 45% partner in my own company that I had brought in 100% of all the revenue prior to that. And so 45% against the two guys who were 55%. 22 years older than me and so much wiser, of course, because they're, you know, older men that have been there, done that. Not really. So the first couple years was pretty good. And then it was in 2017 that we realized there was a major issue with our partnership. They kicked me out, ganged up against me, kicked me out as CEO, said I wasn't capable, essentially let the big boys take over. We've got this little girl, you know, you've done enough. I only brought in, you know, $17 million of the $21 million we did as a firm at that point in time, but you know, you don't need me. So I stayed on as co-president and ended up in 2018, the guys devised a plan to get me kicked out of my own company. They had security walk me out. They had the locksmith there changing the locks as I was leaving. They took my cloud access, all my computer access, every single thing that I had ever had access to at the firm was eliminated. The lucky thing was that I had a laptop that was asleep in my backpack. And so when the security guard walked me out, I had a backpack with the laptop in it. I walked home. They even took away my company car. I don't mean to sound dramatic. It was only a mile walk for me, but still, you know, getting all that taken from you was pretty devastating at the time. And so I walk home and I didn't bring the laptop into the house. Instead, I unplugged all the Wi-Fi in my house, then brought the laptop back in. And when I opened it, everything I had ever had was just archived on the computer. So I got an external hard drive. I started transferring every single thing over that I possibly would have needed. And then long story short, I started Optima 3 days later. Almost 30 of the employees, mostly controllers, all came with me. And I had to do it all over again by myself. Of course, the guys didn't like that. And so they decided to sue me, not to compete with them. And we spent a year and a half in litigation. It was gnarly. You know, and for me, I had to buy 40 laptops right away, business insurance, QuickBooks files, cloud servers. I had to secure an office lease, which was right across the street from them. I had my open house the day of their holiday party, told people turn left for them, turn right for me. You know, this is a decision you have to make. And And so after the year and a half of the litigation was over, we had a jury trial set for April of 2020. Well, we all know what happened in April of 2020. We had COVID, no jury trials were happening. So we ended up settling. I ended up winning. It was a very just successful moment for me. It validated everything that I knew all along, that I could do it on my own. I didn't need the guys. And so Optima did $3.5 million our first year in business. And you know what's funny? It's been 7 years now, and I just signed a new lease in that same building. The same building I got kicked out of. I've been in another building for almost 7 years. And so now I'm literally moving back into that building in a bigger suite, a better office, nicer furniture, more revenue, more employees, and no partners.
What a comeback story. Jennifer, I'm sitting here thinking, how did you find the resilience to move on? I mean, you literally got kicked out of the company you built, and 3 days later, you launched a new company. Like, where did that resilience come from?
I feel like it's fight or flight. Mm. You know, I'm a strong person. It was just a natural instinct. It was like, I'm not going to let these guys take my life, take everything I've built. I'm going to do it again. And fortunately, my husband was really supportive, and we didn't have kids at that point in time. So that was like my sole focus on it wasn't even so much about winning as it was just overcoming such a huge obstacle and proving to myself and to the world that, hey, I didn't need them. You know, everything that they're saying about me not being a worthy CEO and that, you know, let the big boys take over. It was just, you know, it was my natural response.
Mm. And you made the decision to launch Optima really quickly. You said you did it 3 days later. Why do you think speed of execution is so important for CEOs or for leaders? And how has that mindset helped you grow Optima?
Yeah, that mindset has been instrumental. I mean, at the end of the day, if you don't work quickly and you don't make fast decisions, it doesn't always have to be the best decision, right? It just has to be, make a decision and you can course correct. You can change that decision and you can evolve as you go. But if you have analysis paralysis and you're just sitting there, people are going to be doing circles around you. I really think speed of execution in my current business helps us have a major leg ahead. I mean, people will call Optima and we don't know the perfect solution for them. We don't know exactly the state of their books. We don't know what they're going to need in 6 months. We don't know which of their employees might quit, which ones they might need to hire full time. You don't really know any of that in our space, outsourced accounting and fractional HR. And, you know, you really have to wrap your arms around the company and understand what's going on. And so we start immediately. We don't do lengthy proposals. Mm. We usually don't do proposals at all. We said, here's our hourly rates. Everything's hourly. We generally don't do fixed fees. And let's start with a controller. Let's get the controller or an HR manager, depending on which service they need, or they might need both. Let's get them in. Let's do an assessment. Let's start figuring it out. It's all going to be charged hourly. We'll come back with a great plan for you, and we'll get your buy-in. And if it's too much or too little, we can tweak it. But here's what we think, and let's get started. I mean, I can have people there the next day. And while that company might be still thinking about the right option, our competitors are still putting a proposal together. They're still trying to figure out how much they can charge this company. Where I'm like, hey, it could be a small company. It could be large. It could be, let's just get in and start helping them. And then the rest is going to work itself out. So I don't mean to run on too long about that, but I really think that being fast, being quick, just making things happen, just don't let yourself, you know, pontificate too much, because that's going to get you confused and perfect doesn't scale. So can't wait around waiting for things to be perfect.
Yeah. I think that perfectionism can get so many of us caught up, and we overthink and we worry what if. And what I'm hearing you say is make the decision. You can always course correct or change it later if you need to.
Correct. Yeah.
Jennifer, I'm curious, when did you start to truly see yourself as a CEO? Was it when you launched your first company after being fired, or was it when you launched Optima? Like, when do you feel like you truly stepped into that CEO role?
Yeah, it's interesting because you hear a lot about imposter syndrome and people not feeling worthy of where they're at, and they almost need that validation. And so early on, when I first started the first company, it was probably a few years in, I just called myself managing partner. When you have 10 employees and then you have 15 employees and, you know, you're kind of a smaller firm, maybe being the president or maybe being co-founder and managing partner, you know, that felt better to me. It felt, I felt in my early 30s, standing up in front of a large room of people and saying, I'm the CEO. I didn't feel like I had really earned it yet. And so it was probably when I had closer to 30 employees and where I really was leading, executing, inspiring, and not just being so in the weeds. And I think that's what a good visionary does, right? They're really high level, strategic, thinking about their business, not working so hard in their business. Because as a true CEO, you have to rise above that. You can't be in the weeds. You can't be, you know, blocking and tackling so many small little things. And that's just my personal opinion. I was a CEO at Optima day one, but it took a few years at my first company for me to feel comfortable even saying those words.
But then once you did it with Optima, you're like, hey, I am the CEO. I've been here. What do you think was so different that when you started Optima versus the first company?
Experience.
Yeah.
You know, I really took what I learned at the first company and made my second company stronger. I took the best people that I possibly could for my first organization. And then I left the ones I didn't want that I knew were dragging me down or that weren't a good culture fit. I think when you first start a company, you inherit people and, you know, you've got squatters. They stay and stay. And even if they're not performing, they know they're probably not going to get a better job. So they stay. And I didn't have to put up with that the second time around.
Yeah. You mentioned that a true CEO can't be in the weeds. Jennifer, how do we get out of the weeds?
To trust, and you have to delegate. Mm-hmm. You have to hire the right people and really push your ego aside. It's not about you. It's about the company. And so when it's so about you, you know, you might as well be a sole proprietor. But when it's really about the organization that you're building and it's really about creating something that's meaningful, that's a different mindset. And I think if you're staying in the weeds and you're doing things that somebody at $20 or $40 or $80 an hour can do, then that's what your time is worth. And for me, my time is valuable. I don't waste it. And I focus on the most important things that I'm good at. And then hire people smarter than myself, especially in the areas I'm not good at. I'm not a detail person, said most accountants never, right? I'm not a real detail person. And I know that if it comes down to detail and structure and writing up SOPs and creating all these great processes and templates, and I'm like, nope, somebody else has to do that. When it comes to the bookkeeping, like I don't do my own bookkeeping. I don't know why some founders and their wives and their office managers are still doing bookkeeping. It's like, that's not a good use or the best thing that they should be focused on. So, you know, I think it's really realizing that and rising above and doing where you're, you know, most valued.
Yeah. What helped you realize where you're most valued in the company?
I think over time you start, it's not only what you're really good at, it's what you want to do. Mm. You know, I might be really good at something, like I'm a good accountant. I can put together a great cash flow forecast. You know, I can put together financials and graphs and charts, but is that the best use of my time, even though I might like doing it? Mm-hmm. No, I'm good on the phone with new clients. I'm good talking with existing clients. I'm good at hiring and interviewing and getting out there in the community. I sit on 4 boards. I'm a Vistage speaker along with other organizations that I speak to. And so I find that that's probably the best use of my time. Mm-hmm. And doing all the minutia is not. I need to find somebody else to do it.
And so once you find these other people to do the minutia, what helped you learn to let go and trust in your team. So you could do the things you enjoy doing, such as speaking or connecting with clients.
Well, it definitely takes some risk. It definitely takes some money because people aren't free, especially really good people aren't free. I mean, these are, you know, easily six-figure individuals oftentimes that can take work off a CEO's plate. And so you have to invest in your company and you have to be willing to take risks and fail. And I was okay with not being perfect and failing at times and being able to learn from my mistakes. I'm such an optimist, which is one of the reasons I named my company Optima. And so for me, the glass is always half full. I can always course correct. There's always silver linings. And I don't really look back at the past and say, oh God, I should have done this. I should have done that. I'm like, well, that's what happened. Now, how do we either fix it or do it differently next time? What can I teach others about this lesson? Mm-hmm. And so I think it's just a mindset. And then interviewing and, you know, finding the right culture fits. I've been doing assessments like DISC and Myers-Briggs, and there's a lot of them out there, EQ tests. And don't get so excited about an individual because you think that you can start passing the work off. Be excited because they check all the boxes, at least most of the boxes. And so it takes a little bit of patience. And then, you know, a lot of people say, well, I can just do it faster myself. Mm-hmm. I might as well just do it myself. It's going to take me 3 months to train somebody. You know, it took me almost 2 years to fully train and get my business development / customer service guy really able to get on the phone without me and sell deals and meet people and build his network and listen to my pitch and all that. And it's okay that it took a while. I mean, he had the hang of it after 4 to 6 months pretty well. He kind of had to. I got pregnant and had a baby. And then he was like, oh, well.
Gotta figure it out.
Yeah. But it just takes some, patience and time and be willing to invest in your leaders. Be able to invest in the people below you. And be okay if they make mistakes. It took a long time for me to really learn, like, praise them in public and criticize mm-hmm. privately, because you don't want to beat people up, especially in front of their peers. And so, like, hey, you did this really well. I appreciate you. These are the things you could have done better. And as a reminder, this is where I need you to focus. These are your strengths. You know, please try to. So it's kind of the delivery on the people that work under you too, and not expecting them to be you, because they're not going to be you.
Yeah, that has to be tough, because I think we want everyone to perform at the same level that we do. And that's not reality. That's not the way it works.
Yeah. We're not looking for a clone. We're looking for someone that's going to do a great job and maybe have their own spin on it.
That's a great point. Their own spin on it. So there's that positivity coming through in your response there. It sounds like at this point, Jennifer, you've interviewed and hired hundreds of people. And so what are some of the lessons you have learned hiring so many individuals as you've grown your business?
Test, test, test. We have a lot of assessments. So if you're going to be one of our accountants or one of our controllers or our CFO, we need to do, you know, cultural screenings. We need to do a debits and credits test. Do you know your stuff? Like, do you really know accounting? We do essays. We do a lot of upfront work. And some of our candidates are like, I don't want to spend 2 hours trying to work for Optima. Okay, well then don't work for us then. It took a long time to say, you know, to turn people down or create a longer process because we really do want to find that right fit. And then all of our candidates end up meeting with me individually at the very last step. Mm-hmm. And I hire probably 70% of the people that sit across from me, and that's their final interview. And I used to hire like 90% or 100% because I'm a nice person and I'm generous and I'm kind. I'm like, oh, I want to give them an opportunity. They're so nice. But I think it's been a tough lesson for me because I can be super nice, but people don't perform. They tell you what you want to hear. And if there's even a little tiny red flag, I need to say, okay, nope, pass. And that's been tough.
So you just have to trust that your recruiting or your hiring systems are good enough that you can say no, and there will be another person that comes in through the process.
Yeah, we hired 22 people this year.
Yes. So yeah, you are constantly hiring and interviewing. And I love that you are not afraid to have a longer process. You can actually find that right fit.
Yeah, you have to. Don't hire out of desperation. That's a really tough position to be in. And that's what we tell some of our clients too. They're like, we want a full-time person. We don't want to outsource. We don't want to use fractional services. Where we're like, how about we're just interim? Why don't we help you for a little bit? We also do recruiting. Mm-hmm. We charge 5% upon hire and 5% after 90 days, plus an hourly fee to consult and help hire that person. So it's really inexpensive. And so why don't we get in, we'll do the interim work, we'll help you now, and then we'll help you find the right person. Mm-hmm. And oftentimes what they think they need full-time is almost never what we actually end up helping them hire for full-time, or they might not even really need somebody full-time. They just thought they did. And then outsourced services are a perfect fit. And so, you know, it's about that flexibility and understanding, do you really need somebody 30 plus hours a week at one level? And if you don't, find a solution or a firm that might be able to help you on a fractional basis, whether that's marketing or IT or HR, or, you know, anything that really is not the best use of, you know, your team's time and skill set.
That's really interesting. Why do you think people believe they need someone full time? And then when your team gets in there and starts doing the work, you uncover that might not be the case.
I think it's just people have their comfort zone and that's what they've always done. They've said, oh, I've heard stigmas or bad things about outsourcing everything. And, you know, it's just about education. It's just communication, talking to them. And, you know, not some people do need somebody full time. I mean, again, if it's 30 plus hours a week at one level, like you truly need 30 hours of AR, AP, bookkeeping, bank recs, credit card recs. Like you're a decent sized company and you need that 30 hours. Then it is better to have somebody sitting there all day long, especially if you have a physical office. It's going to be, you know, more cost effective. But if you only need 16 hours, 20 hours, hiring somebody full time that you really only need them 16 to 20 hours at that specific level, and then you're hoping that they can be your controller as well. They can put your financials together. They can do cash flow forecasting. They can't. And so you're forcing them to do things that they're not able to do. They might want to do them, but they can't. And then you're stuck with one level who is only good at half their job. Mm. And so once you kind of educate and explain that, it really helps.
What are some of the things that you have done to keep those that you've hired this year happy?
Oh gosh, we are such an employee-friendly firm. Name it, we do it. We have obviously health and dental and vision and a 401k match, and we have a bonus league program where peers can bonus each other. We do a lot of company events, happy hours. We're going to the races this month in August. We're doing the Padres next month. We're doing an anniversary party at a fun, you know, Ocean View location in October. We're doing a holiday party in December. We always do fun things. Mm-hmm. I'm going to do a virtual charcuterie board, you know, building thing for all of our remote employees. We have about 25 people that live outside of California. And so we do a mentorship program. We have coaching. We have a buddy system. We have a path to success where they can move from maybe a staff accountant to an accounting manager or accounting manager to controller. We have a ton of resources and tools and trainings, and I don't know that there's a benefit that we don't offer. We obviously do cell phone reimbursements. We give people laptops. The list goes on. When I started my first company, I really wanted it to be a place where I would want to work if I was still consulting. Mm-hmm. And I really kept that mindset when I started Optima. What would I have wanted if I was across the table for myself and talking to a CEO? What would make me want to work for them? And then what would make me want to stay? Mm. And so I feel like I've done a good job of really putting that into action.
Yeah. Well, and I think that's a really interesting way to look at it. What would make this a place I want to work, and what would make me want to stay? And then it sounds like you weren't afraid to make the investments in your people.
No, money doesn't drive me. So the more I can do for my team, the bottom line isn't about me taking home a bunch of money. Mm. That'll come much later. Right now, it's just really about building and growing and taking care of people.
Yeah, that's fantastic. Well, you know, Jennifer, this has been such an exciting conversation to hear your resilience come through and how you bounced back from being fired and then you bounced back from being kicked out of your own company. And now you've grown an incredible organization where you're passionate about the people that are working for you and you're doing great work for your clients. So I'm curious, what are some of the habits or routines that have been most critical in your journey to elite achievement?
Taking time for myself. I mean, honestly, I don't get to the office until about 11 most days. I work out in the morning. I take care of my toddler. He'll be 3 in a couple weeks. I don't overwork myself and overstress myself. I hire the right people. I delegate. I trust them. You know, I want consensus. I'm not a unilateral leader. And then, you know, I don't ever work on the weekends. I just take time for myself and I treat my employees well. And I make it about the company at large and not me. And that's been a long road so that my company isn't about Jennifer Barnes. Mm-hmm. It's about Optima. Optima's great. Optima has great people. Optima has a great leadership team. Optima runs smoothly without Jennifer. So that's been a journey in itself. So I would say at this point, I would consider elite success achieved.
I love that. I love it. And have you always been able to take that time for yourself, or was that something that you had to work towards?
I think it was when I got pregnant.
Sometimes you don't have a choice then, right?
Yeah. I mean, I'm a hard worker. Even before I became a consultant in this space, I worked like 60 hours a week. And then when I became a consultant in the space, I would work really hard when I needed to, and I would try to take breaks when I could. That was a little fewer and far between, but it was years into my first company before I even was able to take a little bit of a breather. And then at Optima, it was a grind the first couple of years. It was a lot of effort getting a company off the ground. We have 110 employees now, so that took a while, right? When I got pregnant in 2021, I knew that I was going to have to delegate and take a step back and be able to trust people. And so I really put it into motion. I did only take about 3 weeks for maternity leave, and I brought my baby with me to the office a lot. He still comes with me after school. Fortunately, his preschool is, you know, less than a mile from my office, which is all self-design, which is another half a mile from my house. And I've just kind of evolved into, there are other things that are more important than being so incredibly busy all the time in your business.
That is such a powerful way for us to finish our conversation today. So Jennifer, where can our listeners go to learn more about you and your business?
Sure. If you like a live person and you want to call our office, you can call 858-283-1234. If you want to go online, optimaoffice.com, and there's a lot of great information there. There's good testimonials, there's video testimonials from our clients, and there's bios with our team, and we're here to help. You can also email me at jennifer@optimaoffice.com. And I'm always happy to help answer questions, make you feel comfortable with your decision to outsource.
Jennifer, thank you so much for your time today and for sharing your story and telling us more about the work that you do and what it's like to think like a CEO.
Thank you. I appreciate your thoughtful questions and getting to meet you more. And I look forward to another conversation.
Until next time, elite achievers, celebrate your wins, reflect on your lessons, and consistently show up with the mindset and habits that will elevate your success. Remember, progress is made one step at a time. By listening to today's episode, you've taken an important step toward achieving remarkable results. If you're ready to continue your journey, visit my website, kristenburke.com, for resources, tools, and strategies designed to help you experience elite achievement. Subscribe now so you never miss an episode, and let's keep embracing the mindset, effort, and values that drive consistent elite performance. Thank you for listening.